Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon, a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Hi there, it's Alan Mitchell. We're at Nation Radio at the team1260.com if you'd like to email us. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Our focus, Oilers past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. And this week, we'll talk to Kent Wilson from the Nation sites, Hockey Prospectus and The Score. He scored a new gig with the Nations. It'll see him add a lot of impressive content, not just to Oilers Nation, but other sites. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Calgary's efforts to have a lot of guys over 40. In their NHL lineup on opening night. Also, Scott Reynolds from Copper and Blue. The Copper and Blue folks doing their top 25 under 25 countdown for the summer edition. We'll ask him some questions about that and discuss the Northwest Division, any improvements that have been made by the teams in the Northwest. Corey Graham will join us as well in hour number two, play-by-play man for the Edmonton Oil Kings and, of course, host of Edmonton Sports Night Live on Team 1260. Talk about the Oil Kings, their chances in 11-12, the World Juniors, which are in Alberta, including Edmonton this year, and touch base on a lot of changes in the WHL over the summertime. And also, Gabriel Desjardins, one of the true innovators of the advanced stat in the National Hockey League and in hockey. We'll talk to Gabriel about that. And the Winnipeg Jets, Winnipeg Jets fan is Gabriel. And so we'll talk about that, the new logo, and much, much more. And stay tuned for that. And of course, you can email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. Edmonton Indy this weekend in the city, qualifying today because of the rain and some races too later on. There's an Oiler connection to the race. Fast Tracks reports that Edmonton Oiler winger Alish Hemsky will be at the track tomorrow as a guest of Graham Rahal. Rahal once raced in Edmonton in a car sponsored by Rexall. Rahal is a Columbus Blue Jackets fan, but don't worry, Alish isn't going there. Connor, do you go to the races every year? Or
Yesterday was my first time, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I went out and stood in the rain.
Usually I go on Saturday with my son just to see the you know, I think he was about 13, I think I took him the first time. And all I ever did when I was at the race with the boy was say, stop staring at that girl. Stop staring at that girl. So it, really, he got his education about not staring. We taught the glance to the boy at the races. So
a lesson everyone has to learn, every guy.
I think so. It was good that way, but it's going to be a great race tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get the weather. Man, Alberta in the summertime. If you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes, right? No word on Dean Lombardi and what he'll do next in the ongoing saga of Smith-Fraser. So far, he's tried to, he's tried verbal abuse and a mediator. On options now include a formal grievance with the league. He can also hold his breath, or he can sign Drew Doughty and move on with his life. I think Lombardi is a pretty smart guy, a very good general manager. But filing a grievance might be a little risky because it could backfire. One of the options would be, and it would be in front of Gary Bettman, would be that they'd have to go back through all the verbal that he's punished the Oilers with. And I don't think it's a likely possibility or outcome, but they might end up reversing that trade. That is in the options available, in the rainbow of options available. So something they have to be very careful about. And no update. I would think we would have heard something by now, but nothing yet. Winnipeg Jets' new logo is up on their website. I like it. It's very traditional. Hat tip to our flying men in uniform, and the entire look isn't too much like the old one, and that's what I like most, is that it's not a repeat. And word is that there's a lot of people who don't like it because of that, but I don't think you're ever going to please everybody. So we'll talk to Gabriel Desjardins about that a little bit later on in the show. The Oilers look like they're done as far as activity so far. I think there might be some moves around training camp, maybe some a goaltender who another team tries to slip through waivers, something like that. Looks like they're done, though. There are players out there who can help, maybe a defenseman, but the Oilers look fairly set. Andrew Cogliano, did you hear about the contract in Anaheim this week? 3 years, $2.39 million cap hit. If Steve Tambellini had signed Cogliano to that kind of deal, I think there would have been a lot of discussion about an overpay. So the trade that sent Cogliano to Anaheim looks even better because he got Belanger at a great price. Belanger fits the roster spot, that third-line center, better than Cogliano. Also got a second-round pick for Cogs. Not bad. Very, very well done. Whatever else you want to say about how the summer went for Steve Tambellini, that was a good set of moves, I think. We have much more to talk about today, including the roster makeup of the Edmonton Oilers for 11-12. I think it's coming into view. We'll talk about that and more as time goes on, but we are joined first by Mr. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation, The Score, Hockey Prospectus. Kent, you were on a couple of weeks ago, and you're back, but we have some things to talk about. So, first of all, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Alan.
Let's start with your new position as overlord of Oilers Nation. Congrats.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
The money's coming in the mail. Don't worry about it.
I've heard that before.
Now, I had lunch with Wanye maybe a month and a half ago, and he talked about some exciting things, not just with the Oiler Nation and the Canucks Army, but also the Winnipeg Jets and NHL numbers. So I don't know how much you can tell us right now, but what are some of the things we can look forward to as readers of the various sites, and what are some of the things that you're going to have impact in moving forward?
Well, we have one of my main responsibilities right now is really getting some of the other sites on their feet. You mentioned Canucks Army. Leafs Nation is one that we have going. And Jets Nation obviously just launched. And, we have Oilers Nation, obviously. It's the big brother of the network. Basically, I just leave you guys alone because you know what you're doing. You do a good enough job, so you don't need me getting in the way. What I'm doing on the other sites is, you know, trying to gather talent, trying to coordinate contributions, and trying to make them, you know, as good as possible, as good as Oilers Nation is, and trying to get the traffic up. As far as NHL numbers goes, that's a well-traveled site by most people. It's been around for years. It was authored by a friend of mine, which is why we were able to get it into the network in the first place. And we're trying to not only have salaries on the site, but also perhaps some stats down the road, so you can maybe you go and check a guy's salary hit and his cap hit, but you can also look at, you know, maybe his underlying numbers, maybe his counting stats, and maybe we'll come up with something like value per dollar, which we can put on the site. That's obviously down the road, but we're also sort of trying to redesign the entire platform across the entire network, so better commenting, more social media integration, just a better overall platform for everyone to engage in.
I want to, before we move on, I just want to ask you a little bit about the advanced stats. So the dream is with the NHL numbers to maybe come up with a site that, you know, you click on it and you're looking at Jeff Petrie, you might get all of his stats and then some underlying or secondary numbers in terms of toughness of opponent, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're anything like me, you'll go to a salary site and you'll have to look up what the guy makes, and then you'll have to go elsewhere, maybe two or three different other sites to see, you know, what kind of player he is, if he's worth the salary. So theoretically, we'd like to combine those two things into the one site.
I've had a few folks who are I'm old, so I have a lot of people over the years that are in my purview, and a couple of them are huge Jets fans who have some writing experience. So, are you looking for, or is that something you're just skewing? As far as the people that you know, as far as writers for the Jets site is concerned.
Oh no, we're definitely looking for people for talent that's out there. It's tough, given that the team hasn't really had a season under its belt. So scouting talent, people who are writing about the Jets, is tough right now. So if you have anyone in mind, please forward me their information. I'll probably get in contact with them for sure.
And you can, like, they can, the two people I know are in prison, so they would have to obviously, you know, work out of there, but that's okay too, right? Okay. With all of these writers at all the different sites, you do realize all of us are going to want to cover the Canucks in the playoffs, because that's probably the only team that, the Habs too, but there's a chance there's going to be one playoff team.
Exactly. I mean, we're getting Canucks Army on its feet. I think what will happen is, you know, they'll cover the Canucks well enough for the playoffs, and the rest of us will show up to disparage them as much as possible.
Well, that's the tradition anyway. Okay, yeah. Enough about the site and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the Northwest Division, and let's start with your team, the one that you know best, the Flames. I think they're in a funny spot right now. If everything breaks right, they could make the playoffs, maybe win a series if Lanco can stay healthy and a few other things. And again, like Kipper, you know, play well enough, I think they could win a series. Is that the outer marker for the Flames as looking at them right now?
I would think so, Alan. And the Flames are, they haven't been elite at any real part of the last decade. You can maybe look at the year they won the division. A lot of people will probably point to the Stanley Cup run, but let's face facts, that they caught lightning in a bottle that year. It wasn't necessarily indicative of the skill level of the team. And the Flames have never really been able to get over that hump despite the best efforts. You can call them the best efforts of Daryl Sutter. So, and that's where they're at now. They have an aging core. Ginley isn't going to get better. He may have bounce back years like he did last season, but he is what he is right now. He's a 34-year-old guy. He's carried the load for a lot of years, and he's just starting to slow down. And the team doesn't have anyone in the wings who can take over for him if he ever stumbles. Now, if Kiprusoff bounces back again, the team should be better. There is some concern with the blue line absent Regeer, and there's really no one there who in the past has taken off on similar circumstances. But exactly, the Flames are a middling team, and they'll probably have middling results.
When Craig McTavish left the Edmonton Oilers, some of us, and I'm going to include myself in here, we really felt that he was holding that roster together in a lot of ways with binder twine and, you know, spit and glue. And when Pat Quinn came in, the bottom fell out, let's be honest here, and the team dived to the basement where it currently resides. Is there doesn't seem to be that same kind of sense with the Flames, and yet part of being able to reload as opposed to rebuild is getting enough young players into the system. Are the Flames, in your opinion, doing a good job of that? Is there a lot in the pipeline, or is there a definite disconnect between this veteran group and the players who are going to come in? Is there going to be a period of basement dwelling for the Flames in the next few years?
I would say that's probably inevitable. It may not happen now, but down the road, when Aginla's, you know, 36 years old, Tangy will be 33 or 34. Lanco will probably be retired. You know, a lot of the core players, Kiprusoff will be 36, 37. There's just nobody in the pipeline for the Flames to step up and take the mantle from that kind of quality of player. Now, Calgary does have a nice middle of the roster with guys like Glenn Cross and David Moss. Michael Backlund looks like he's going to be an NHLer. But there's no elite players there, and that's one of the issues that the organization has struggled with, not just recently under Sutter, but probably in the last two decades. They haven't been able to procure quality players from the draft for one reason or the other. And Sutter got in the habit of selling the team's future in order to keep to plug holes in the present, and that's sort of coming home to roost now.
Let's switch gears, and while we're in Alberta, let's stay in Edmonton. I see this team as a club that could improve quite a bit, especially if they get a decent goaltending. We'll call it NHL average goaltending, and that's a question mark. I understand that, but it's also a team, though, that could improve by 20 points and not really move up in the standings.
No.
How do you, is that a fair assessment of the Oilers, or am I going too far the other way?
No, I think that's pretty accurate. If the Oilers are healthy this year, I think that will add a few wins to their record for sure. Of course, I think you guys probably say that every year, and it never comes to pass for whatever reason.
It's that hobbling we do. Just teasing. No,
I think it's something in the water up in Edmonton.
Oh, man.
It's unbelievable. Every year there's just a swath of injuries. But, the kids may improve, and might add some points. I think your blue line is pretty questionable, unfortunately, and that actually might be the biggest question mark going forward for Edmonton.
Yeah, I think that the Oilers need to count on defensively huge steps forward for Peckham and Petrie.
Yeah.
And history tells us that one might, but the other, the likelihood of both of them stepping forward at the same time isn't large.
It's pretty low, yeah.
Yeah. This is Nation Radio and Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. We're in conversation with Kent Wilson from Flames Nation, The Score, Hockey Prospectus, and various other locations on the internet. The Canucks look to me like a team that did it right. They didn't change too much. They went to the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. They've improved in some areas. They lost some players, but seem to have addressed most issues, and they haven't done anything catastrophic to their roster. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I like most of their moves. Retaining Chris Higgins for a pretty cheap ticket, I think it was $1.9 million. I really like that move by them. Chris Higgins is sort of a guy who flies under the radar these days because he's not scoring 20 goals anymore. He just does everything else right that helps a team win. Of the Flames' prior trades under Daryl Sutter, he was one of the guys I was hoping the team would retain when they got him after watching him in Flames colors. So I like that move by Vancouver. The Sturm acquisition is a bit of a gamble, just given his poor health over the last few years. He's a relatively effective top six player when he's in the lineup and functional. But, I think it's worth the gamble for them. As you say, they didn't they didn't come out of the finals like, say, Philadelphia a couple years ago, man. And just decide to napalm the whole thing, and it's not working out. I think they're a very good team. They have a really good basis, and, I mean, one or two breaks, and they probably would have won the Stanley Cup this season. So, as you say, it doesn't make sense to make drastic changes.
I would slot the Canucks at the top of the division, the Flames in the conference, a team that would be a bubble team. Minnesota is a team that I can never really get a feel for. I think they're improving, but I don't know if it's for the coming year. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't like Minnesota's the makeup of their roster. It might depend on the new coach, how he treats his players. The last coach kind of switched things around from the way things were done by the previous regime, and it didn't really get them anywhere. They used to have Mikko Koivu being sort of a Selkie candidate. He would go out and face all the tough matchups, and they changed that to give him, you know, preferential treatment, get his numbers up, but it sank the rest of the roster. So, and the problem is the rest of the Winnipeg roster is cannon fodder before, you know, aside from one or two players, cannon fodder before a really good team. So it's really tough to win when you spend most of the night in your own end.
Yeah, for sure. And the final team in the division, the Colorado Avalanche, and they had I don't know how to describe their summer because you can't get around what they spent to get their goaltender. How do you feel about the Avalanche? They were a team that last year finished 6 points ahead of the Oilers, so there's a lot of work to do there. How do you feel about their summer and what they've done?
Well, I got to be frank. I don't know what Greg Sherman is doing in Colorado. It's just sort of a baffling soup of nonsense, if you ask me. There is obviously he's trying to be as cheap as possible. That might be, you know, a dictate from up above, but the goaltending moves over the last year or so by Sherman are absolutely baffling. I mean, losing Craig Anderson after a down year for nothing. I mean, they didn't even qualify Brian Elliott, who they got for Anderson, and then sort of overcompensating by, you know, chasing Varlamov and paying way too much for him, and then signing Jaguar, who hasn't been a functional goaltender for, I think, two or three seasons now, to a contract. It just, I don't know, nothing they do really makes sense in Colorado to me.
Yeah, no, it's a mystery. I think that they're setting themselves up for the next general manager to look really good. That's the only thing, yeah. Only thing I could think of. A couple of quick ones. What do you think of the Jets logo?
I like it. Yeah. I think I heard you talking about it earlier. It's simple, but it's different, which works for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. And one final thing, I don't know if you've heard or not, but there was some talk a while ago about the Columbus Blue Jackets maybe knocking on the door of the Oilers in the Alex Hemsky sweepstakes with Hyzelius being down. They've signed Vinny Prospel to a one-year, $1.7 million contract, 36 years old, 23 points in 29 games for the Rangers last year. What do you think of that contract?
Well, he's certainly no Alex Hemsky.
No.
But the Blue Jackets are sort of in a tough area where they have to start winning here soon, or else I think they're in trouble. They're probably in trouble financially now, but even more trouble going forward. But they're the type of team that isn't necessarily the first destination for unrestricted free agents and such, so they have to find other means to acquire players. You saw the Jeff Carter trade as an example, but I mean, they might as well take that sort of gamble on Prospel. He's sort of up and down as a player, and he's not gonna back check too much for you, but he can put up numbers if put in the right situation, so I think it's a worthwhile move.
Kent, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
No problem, Alan.
Okay. 12:19, that's Kent Wilson from Flames Nation, The Score and Hockey Prospectus, and of course his new role is Overlord of the Nation's Sights, and he told us a little bit about some exciting things that are upcoming on the Nation's. So, look forward to that and to talking to Kent again throughout the summer. If you didn't hear just a minute ago, we had word that the Columbus Blue Jackets have signed UFA forward Vaclav Prospel to a one-year, $1.75 million contract. So, interesting stuff. Coming up, Copper and Blue and Scott Reynolds.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And coming back, it's 12:24. This is Nation Radio. Coming back to reports, I'm reading this off of Los Angeles Times online, that Amy Winehouse was found passed away in her home. And that moved about, I think, 17 minutes ago. So give you an update on that. Tragic news in the world of music and entertainment. Amy Winehouse passed away. It's 1224. This is Nation Radio. You can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Joined now by Scott Reynolds from Copper and Blue. Scott, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Very well, very well. I'm watching the Copper and Blue Top 25 Under 25 with special interest, partly because there's so much talent. It's one of the few times I can feel superior about being an Oiler fan. And, and also because it's an interesting battle. Explain how you reach a consensus on the list that you do. I know you have several guys who input, and then it's an average, but tell me a little bit about what goes into it.
Well, like you said, that there's just it's an average of the six people that are doing the rankings. So we each make our own list of all the players that the Oilers have the rights to that are under 25 years old. And we rank them from 1, in this case it was 1 to 48. And then we take an average to get their overall score. In terms of how people come to their conclusion, in terms of how they do the rankings, it's a little bit different for each guy. So I can't really comment on, you know, how Derek does it or how Ben does it. For me, it's about looking at the players as hockey players, not necessarily looking a lot at how much money they're making, which is important when you're looking at guys with NHL contracts. So for me, it's just taking a look at the individual player, looking at their skill set, and then asking myself, if this player was just a restricted free agent, didn't have a contract, the qualifying offer had been made and declined, you know, just leaving contracts out of it, which player would I rather have as a part of my organization? And then I rank them accordingly. So that's basically how I do it. I know everyone does it a little differently, though. So
I am impressed, though, because it's not just a numbers thing. Teddy Peckman did well, and he's not a numbers guy, but he showed up very well in your numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the tricky things. I mean, I know for our list, I'm actually the one who ranked in the lowest. But but having said that, the tricky thing is trying to decide, okay, how much should I count on someone's potential? You know, some of these guys that we maybe just drafted, that the Oilers just picked up, you know, a month ago. And how am I going to compare those players to a guy like Theo Peckham, who's been, you know, just finished his rookie season in the NHL, showed pretty well, all things considered, I think. He played pretty well, was in over his head a little bit when they were playing him with Tom Gilbert, taking on some pretty difficult minutes. But, I mean, you got to kind of expect that, right, when you're talking about a rookie defenseman in the NHL. So,
do you guys crank on each other for perceived wobbly picks? Or because the range of numbers is what I like about it is that there's not there's a lot of agreement, but there's enough variance that it makes it interesting. So if you're picking Theo Peckham lower, does anybody call you up and go, what are you on, man? Or is it just, you know, you put your numbers in and then you're surprised to see everybody else coming up with those numbers?
Yeah, well, we definitely rag on each other a little bit. I mean, that's part of the fun of it, right? So anyone that does lists like this, I know you do your own list. Part of it is just it's having fun, right?
Yeah.
So and ragging on each other is part of that fun. Actually, we just had a conversation with some of the guys around because Andrew Cogliano got traded. Mm-hmm. You know, we did an article on him that was very brief, where he slotted in, and then the guy who had finished 26th, we did a brief sketch on him, and then the guy that finished 26th was Chris Vandevelde. So it was a little bit interesting because when you're comparing the rankings side by side like that, a couple of guys actually had Vandevelde ahead of Cogliano in the rankings. So I was giving them a hard time about that.
And yeah.
I'm sure they'll be giving me a hard time about stuff as we move forward. So.
Do you know who number one is, or is
oh,
it?
Oh yeah, we know all the rankings right now.
Would so. would you tell me? Would you release that now?
I don't know if we can release
that.
But,
all right.
Well, I think people have a pretty good idea of who number one is going to be.
Probably not a terribly large mystery. Okay.
That might be the least mysterious one. But,
well, one of the items of interest for me was Ryan Martindale. You, I think it was you who wrote an article on him.
Right, that's right.
And he was a tough person for me to slot just because he doesn't look like other Stu McGregor picks. And by that I mean he's a tall guy and he's definitely skilled, but there's a sense that maybe he's not a leader type, and there's also a sense that maybe he's a tad soft. Not to be critical, but that's the reading between the lines of the scouting report. That's what I see.
Right.
Tell me why you like him and why you don't think those concerns are as important as maybe some of the other writers at CNB.
Yeah, the reason that I like a guy like Ryan Martindale is mostly because of the numbers. I mean, he put up good numbers in his draft year. He was very close to a point per game in his draft year in the OHL, which is, when you're talking about a guy that was drafted at the start of the third round, that's a very good result. And then he took a big step forward this year in terms of his offense. And so I have a hard time with figuring that, you know, this is a guy that, you know, doesn't play with intensity, doesn't show determination, he doesn't have maybe that character or work ethic to get to the next level, when he's putting up such fantastic numbers. I mean, to me, it's almost a win-win, because if he gets to the AHL or the ECHL or wherever he ends up starting playing his pro hockey career, and he realizes, you know, wow, I got to work harder to get in here, then you have a player with a very good sort of natural talent who's all of a sudden going to, you know, try to put that work ethic into his game, and maybe he improves. And if he does have that work ethic already, if, you know, these concerns are misplaced, then you have a guy putting up quite good numbers already, big centerman, and you have a good prospect. So it's almost whether those concerns are justified or not, I kind of see it as almost a win-win, because, how good do you think he could have been if he had those things already? That's kind of my big question for folks that say, you know, well, if he worked harder, he'd be a better player. Well, he'd be a better player, but he's already putting up, you know, he's one of the top 20 scorers in his league. So how good do you think he could be? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that sometimes we as fans, we have, I don't care who you are, there's a bias involved. And I think sometimes when we hear the word soft or somebody who's maybe not as physical, we automatically jump to the fact, oh, well, he won't make it. That's not the case. He's obviously a very highly skilled guy.
Yeah, well, and some of the scouting reports on him they tend to say that he doesn't play a physical game, but at the same time, talk about how he can use his body to, shield the puck, things like that. So it seems more to me like he's just not the kind of guy that's going to go out and hit somebody. But that doesn't mean he can't use his frame to his advantage, use his reach, use his ability to protect the puck. So
I see a bit of a gap between Jeremy Blaine and Brandon Davidson as players. Obviously, we don't know a lot about them because they've only been in the system a while and they're still teenagers. How do you come out on that as a group, and how do you personally feel who is a better prospect, Davidson or Blaine?
Well, see, that's a really interesting comparison, because Blaine's obviously quite a bit younger, right? Davidson, they were drafted the same year, but Davidson was drafted as an overager. And so for me, I have Blaine a little bit ahead. And as a group, I think we actually have Davidson a little bit ahead, but they're very close to one another on the list. Now, having said that, for me, it's I go with Blaine just because he had such an outstanding year. But Davidson is a good player who hasn't received high-level coaching until very recently. He's just played 2 years of major junior. As of right now. And so whether they send him back to junior or whether he gets a contract and they start him in the AHL this year, he's a guy that could show tremendous progress very quickly, because now he's finally getting that coaching. Now he's finally having someone work with him on the issues that he has, like skating. Whereas a guy like Blaine, who's maybe a little bit ahead, like if you just picked a player for right now, you might pick him. But he's had that coaching all along. He's had people helping him with all that stuff throughout his sort of young career.
Right. Of the group from that draft, I think the only ones unsigned, Davidson signed to PTO, but I don't think the Oilers have signed him yet, and right. Martindale is unsigned as well. Any particular reason, in your opinion, that they've waited on these players?
Well, I mean, they can only sign so many contracts, for one thing. And as far as why they picked those two not to sign, I'm not sure. I mean, I probably would have done it differently, to be honest. So I'm not sure why they decided not to sign those guys and instead to sign a guy like, you know, Tyler Pitlick, who moved into the WHL for his first year of junior after playing a year in college and played pretty well, but didn't dominate the league or anything. So to me, it seemed like it might make more sense to move a guy like Martindale to the AHL and leave Pitlick in junior for another year. Obviously, the organization at this time seems to feel differently. They might change their minds in training camp, so There's still time to do that, but yeah, it's hard to say why they picked one guy over another.
Yeah, I think I agree with you totally in there. I think in listening to what the Oilers say about Pitlick, they are really high on him. They believe he's going to, I think, come into the AHL and do well. Do you think the Oilers got enough in the Andrew Cogliano deal?
To me, yes. I mean, I think they got enough. If they had decided that they're going to trade him, a second-round pick is, you know, that's fine. But to me, the one thing that's a little bit frustrating about it is that it's one more sign that they're not quite trying to maximize their ability to win now.
Right.
It's a trade that will benefit them down the line. Mm-hmm. So either they use the pick to pick somebody and then it helps, you know, 2015 or 2016 at the earliest, or they use that pick as an asset that they can use in a trade either this year or next year, when they feel like they can maybe fill a slot. Like maybe they want to pick up a defenseman with that pick. And so at the deadline, if they feel like they need some extra defense, maybe they use that second rounder to pick one up. But that's my only real concern with the deal, is that the team is worse now without Andrew Cogliano. And I know people say, you know, well, he'd have been on the fourth line kind of thing. And that's true, but I mean, guys always get hurt, right?
Yeah, they do.
So he probably would have started the year on the fourth line, but he would have played the majority of the season in the top nine, because he would have been probably the first option to move up into that top nine. And a guy like Andrew Cogliano is going to be very motivated to prove people wrong, to say, you know, I shouldn't have been starting on the fourth line. I should have been in the top nine forwards all along, and I'm going to prove it. So if this team was in a sort of win now mode, trying to make the team as good as they can for this season, it's a trade that doesn't make sense. But because I know they're not quite in that mode yet, it's a trade that can make sense in their sort of overall plan.
Yeah, I think I believe that Tom Rennie really thought he had a player there, and I think that signing Belanger sort of ended it, and then the Jones signing and then Nugent Hopkins being selected first overall, I just think it meant that they had to move a body out, and Cogliano probably had the highest value. My favorite article that you wrote this week involves Steve Tambellini, or at least indirectly. You wrote about Anaheim and their handling of their RFAs, and that involved the Cogliano signing.
Yeah.
What did you find there in terms of how Bob Murray signs compared to the rest of the National Hockey League, these RFAs?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I didn't actually make a huge comparison to what other people are doing in the league. What I did do was sort of take a look at the important everyone has lots of restricted free agents, Ryan O'Mara, some people like that. But I looked at the important restricted free agent signings he's made since coming on as general manager in Anaheim, and noticed a little bit of a trend that he had seemed to have some trouble evaluating the sort of mid-range guys. I mean, you got the guys like Bobby Ryan, who's an excellent player, and it's, in a way, it's easier to get value out of those guys because they're worth a lot, so you can pay them a lot. But the guys who are more mid-range, the James Wisniewskis, the Lucas Spieses, the Andrew Coglianos, it seemed like there was sort of a consistent overpayment happening there relative to what they'd accomplished. He was really paying them for their potential, and at the same time not really locking in very much in the way of unrestricted free agent seasons. Like in the Cogliano deal, Cogliano only gave up one unrestricted free agent year. In the Lucas Spisa deal, he didn't give up any. And then the James Wisniewski deal was a really large payment for what he had accomplished in the NHL so far, but it was only 1 year. And so then the next season, his qualifying offer is going to be very high, and it's going to be very difficult to continue to get value out of them. And then just sort of riffed off that to say, you know, this is going to be an area that's very important for the Oilers going forward as some of their mid-range guys come up for contract renewal.
Right.
I like Magnus Pajarvi as much as the next guy, but realistically, he's probably not going to end up being a first-line winger on this team. He's going to be one of those middle six wingers. And the Oilers are going to have to try to figure out, okay, how much can we pay for a middle six winger? How much is that going to be worth? And so when he comes off his entry-level contract in 2 years, this is going to be an area of high importance. And actually, it's one of the areas that I think Tambellini at times has done well in. I really liked the Cogliano deal he signed last year. I mean, that was a very low-risk deal, not too much money, gave them an opportunity to make a decision on the player, which they then did. I like the Sam Gagner deal, you know, 2 years, not too much money. Again, gives them an opportunity to make a decision on the player. If he doesn't progress as much as hoped, you can still sign him to another contract. Don't have to worry about a qualifying offer that's too high. On the other hand, there have been times when it seems like maybe he's paid a little bit too much for players. So the Gilbert Brulé deal comes to mind there. Maybe the recent deal Ladislav Smead signed, but that's probably a difference in opinion of where I think he fits as compared to where the Oilers think he fits. It seems clear that they think he's a top four defenseman sort of right now, whereas I'd be more comfortable starting him as the fifth defenseman, and then as injuries mount up, he can step into the top four and maybe succeed. So.
Couldn't agree with you more on that point. Do you think, and just real quickly, because you did a really nice job of summing up that particular area, do you think the blogosphere as a group have been fair to Steve Tambellini since he became the GM?
Yes, I think they've been fair. But at the same time, I mean, whenever you're the general manager of a 30th place team, that there's going to be a lot of criticism. So, so he's gotten a lot of criticism. And once that ball gets rolling, sometimes it's difficult to give a guy credit where it's due. Mm-hmm. And so I know for myself, whenever my initial reaction is, oh, it's terrible, I always have to take a step back and say, okay, but is it really? Because that's just sort of your natural instinct when you get into the mode of criticize. Because it has been that because the team's been so poor.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I think that he's done a lot better in this year than he did in the sort of previous year. Basically, as soon as they kind of made that decision, whenever it was, shortly before they drafted Taylor Hall, that this was going to be a long-term rebuilding mode plan, you can kind of see how each move fits into that plan. I haven't liked every move, but you can at least see what they're doing. Whereas before, when they were saying, you know, we're going to be a good team, so we're going to go out and sign Nikolai Habibul, and I mean, a lot of people at the time were like, this is not a good idea.
Right.
And you kind of got the sense of, wow, you know, we're going in the wrong direction here. Whereas now, you're kind of like, well, it's taking us a long time to get there, but at least they're, you know, he's working through a plan that kind of makes sense. So.
Yeah, I think that it's like the Dustin Penner move, as an example. I think there's a lot of people who didn't like the Dustin Penner move, but if you look at it in the context of this team wanting to get another defense prospect and then to get that first-round pick, which became Klefbom, they're still in build mode, right? It's not a matter of, you know, we're impatient and we want them to contend right away. They feel like they've got to, you know, kick off this many widgets before they start to build, and I think that obviously happened this year, and beginning in the fall, there's likelihood. I keep thinking about a goaltender they need to add and maybe a defenseman, but you can see where they could maybe improve by 15 points or so in the NHL standings this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they could improve by that much, just like you said, by getting better goaltending. And they could easily get better goaltending with the tandem they have. I don't know that they could get good goaltending with the tandem they have, but it could certainly be better than it was last year.
Where do you see the Oilers finishing in the Western Conference? Not just in points. I think we all agree that they're going to be improved. Mm-hmm. But where do you see them fitting between 10 and 15, say?
Yeah, between 10 and 15. That's where I see them sitting. So,
well, thanks, Scott.
I mean, the reality is, when you're talking about predicting where these teams are going to fit, there's probably four or five teams at the bottom of the Western Conference, and that the team that gets the most injuries or the worst luck is the team that's going to finish last. And that team could be the Oilers. So I could easily see them finishing last in the conference yet again. Now, having said that, they are a better team than they were last year. So hopefully we see them improve. But I think unless they're really touched by the gods, they're not going to be a playoff team. And realistically, that sort of 10th to 15th range is probably where they fit. They're not quite at the level of even the bubble teams in the conference yet. So,
right.
Yeah, they might be able to sneak ahead of one of the teams. Like, they might be able to sneak ahead of Colorado or maybe a team like Minnesota, maybe even Phoenix, who, you know, they have a pretty decent set of forwards, but they've lost a great goalie in Brizgalov, and I think they might be headed for a bit of a fall unless Dave Tippett can really keep things on track. So.
Now, final question here. What can we look forward to from you and others from Copper and Blue this week?
Yeah, well, this week we're going to be continuing that top 25 under 25 series. That's the big item that's going to be going on the blog. And other than that, I'm sure we'll have a few more articles sort of targeted towards a broad NHL audience. I like doing those articles a lot, so that way it's not all Oilers all the time, and you get into the minutia of arguing about whether Tom Gilbert is soft for the 6,000th time.
Well, you tell Zona not to get intimidated by the rest of you over Gagne. He needs to push as hard as he can.
Yeah, no, I promise you he still likes Gagne. So,
all right, Scott, thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, Scott Reynolds from Copper and Blue. Interesting conversation about the Oilers and what they're doing on a very interesting site. If you haven't been to Copper and Blue before, check it out. They do great work over there. We've got more coming up right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:49. We're available at Nation Radio with the team, 1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Earlier today, actually just a few minutes before I went on the air, I had a chance to talk to Gabriel Desjardins, one of the true innovators in the field of advanced stats and a big-time Winnipeg Jets fan. And so we talked to him about the Jets and some advanced stats and the Edmonton Oilers as well towards the end of the interview. We began by talking about the weather in Southern California.
I'm good. And it actually is pretty sunny right now.
Are you in San Jose area? Is that correct?
San Francisco.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice city. I love your blog, Arctic Ice Hockey, part of the SB Nation. I love your line, Arctic Ice Hockey, which is devoted to the Winnipeg Jets, where we hate Winnipeg's natural rivals, the Florida Panthers.
I know. Well, I mean, obviously, the Southeast Division of the NHL is where all Winnipeg's natural rivals are.
Well, at least for a year, right?
Yeah, for a year. And, hey, who knows? I mean, maybe there'll be some angry rivalries that stay there, like the Tampa Bay-Yankees rivalry.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's a good one. What do you think of the new Jets logo?
Not going to lie to you. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think that I'm going to have to come to accept it because what else can I do? But, you know, obviously it looks like the Air Force logo. Mm-hmm. But that was not the first thing that came to mind. It actually looks like the 12-foot ring on a curling rink to me.
Ah.
Yeah.
I didn't see it that way, but now that I look at it, now that you mentioned that, I can see what you're talking about there. Looks like the ownership group had an idea about, it was inspired by the logo of the Royal Canadian Air Force. You can see that too, but you're right about the curling idea.
Yeah. I'm actually a little disappointed. I have to admit, I'm a fan of the logo that I came up with, which is up in the top corner of Arctic Ice Hockey. It's the 1915 Allen Cup winning Winnipeg Monarchs W.
Yeah, it's very it's simple, but it's very nice.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Now let's talk a little bit about your fan, how you've been a fan of the Jets, and then they went away, and you followed the NHL, but they're back. Do you feel already a connection to the new Winnipeg Jets?
I do feel a connection. It'll be good. Well, the reason I feel a connection, I think, is sort of the disappointment over their first round draft pick, which I think is oddly reminiscent of the disappointment over the selection of Jimmy Mann in 1979.
Oh my God!
That's a lot of parallels drawn here in time. But you know, I think that I think after getting to see the team play a few times, I think it'll be an even stronger connection.
I really liked your article that you wrote. You've written a couple of brilliant posts on this subject, but it focused on the Jets taking Mark Scheifele over Sean Couturier, which you referenced a minute ago. Your conclusion online, for those who haven't read it, can you pass along what conclusion you came to?
Well, fundamentally, the number 7 draft pick is actually a pretty valuable spot. And I think if you go back over the last 30 years of drafts, you see there's about 3 duds in there. Ryan Sittler, for example. But it's been a long time since anybody's completely blown that pick. And you expect a really good player there. Mike Scheifele is if you look at players who've had seasons like him in the past, they don't generally turn out to be good NHL hockey players. I'd say about half of them never even play in the NHL. And so that's a much higher probability of picking a dud than GMs have historically had in that spot. So that's something very concerning. Couturier, on the other hand, you know, he's a guy who scored a lot in junior, and those are guys who score a lot in the NHL and play a lot in the NHL. And he's much more typical of a number 7 pick, and now he's much more typical of a number 8 pick. So essentially, all signs point to a much tougher road for Scheifele. And I don't think, I mean, I think Sean Couturier is almost guaranteed to be in the NHL and playing for the Flyers next year, whereas I don't think that that's on the radar screen for Scheifele.
Using the metric of NHL game played through age 26 and point per game and junior as the other side of the graph, using this, and if we were to place Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on the list, even though he played in the WHL, he would also fall below Couturier, correct?
Let's see. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a little – sorry to put you on the spot there. I did the numbers based on not comparing WHL to WHL, but on your graph. If you were to put Ryan Nugent-Hopkins into the mix, he scored 106 points in the Western Hockey League, I believe, in 69 games, which comes in a little lower than the number for Sean Couturier.
That's not a particularly consequential difference. I mean, that's probably, you know, if Couturier – is an 80% pick, then Nugent-Hopkins is maybe a 70% pick. I don't think it's, you know, and obviously there are other factors there. This is a very, very, very coarse estimate.
Yeah.
So there could be other things. But I think that what you see with Couturier is that people were disappointed that he didn't have a breakout season, right? That he hit this phenomenal level of performance at age 17, mm-hmm. and at age 18 wasn't significantly better.
Yeah.
And what I found is that that doesn't really matter, that doesn't really impact a player's ultimate performance in the NHL. You know, it's basically that age 17 season doesn't have much predictive value. It's really the age 18 season.
Well, what I found interesting in regard to Sean Couturier is in talking to his Q coach for this past season, is he got a late start because of mono. And he was run down all season because of mono, because he obviously played in the World Juniors as well. And I think you can make a strong argument that Couturier, at some level this year, was hamstrung by things that were out of his control, his health and that sort of thing. And we might be looking at a guy who just blossoms next year with the Flyers at the NHL level. And there's going to be more than the Winnipeg Jets regretting the fact that he fell so far.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that even no matter what you think is the ceiling for Scheifele relative to Couturier, the fact remains that there were a number of NHL teams that would have been overjoyed to pick up Couturier in that slot.
Yeah.
And that the Jets picked a player, even if they picked the player they wanted, there was still more value in trading Couturier to another team. If they really didn't think Couturier was any good, trade down, get a player who can help you immediately. Do something, right? There's got to be somebody out there who's willing to overpay. Get somebody to take Ron Hainsey's contract off your hands. There are all kinds of options there. But you know, the Jets, I think, decided to give up a lot of the advantage that they had in that slot.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other moves they've made, maybe the ones at the NHL level. The first few moves were very, what I would call, small, measured improvements, maybe even AHL kind of moves. And I think that's a fine way to start. But have they done enough at the NHL level to address some weaknesses, like at center, for instance?
Well, what I've been telling everybody, and I put it on my blog and anybody I've talked to, is that there's a very good reason why people were required to make 5-year season ticket commitments. And that's because this team is not going to be any good anytime in the next 5 years. This is a team that is got to rebuild. Got to spend a lot of time acquiring players, improve the player development system, draft well. And it's only after a number of years that we should expect to see a product that's any good. And I don't know what kind of revenues they're ultimately going to be looking at in Winnipeg. I know tickets are among the most expensive in the league. And it's unclear whether the Jets will be able to spend much more over the salary floor than they are at the moment.
I regret to ask you this because I hope the answer is not what I think it's going to be, but is it possible the Jets are using the Oiler model here?
Well, no. The Oiler model is to actually make catastrophic decisions and perform worse than they would if, I don't know, if a monkey was throwing darts at a dartboard to select the team. The Jets are pointing more towards the Atlanta model, really, at the moment, mm-hmm. is to spend not all that much money and finish out of the running for a playoff spot.
So do you think somebody like Zach Bogosian is a candidate for trade at some point, if not now, then some point later in the season? If the rebuild or if the next several years are about, you know, being poor and, you know, doing it that way, do you think Bogosian is a candidate to be a cornerstone of the franchise or more likely going to be moved?
Well, I'm a huge Bogosian fan, and I think he's gotten a raw deal. This is one of those things where, you know, you had a coach who, for some reason, decided that he just wasn't that good a player. I mean, Bogosian last year, strange case, was simultaneously playing against other teams' number one lines and getting benched. And his results weren't all that bad on a terrible team. So we really have to see what the new coaching staff thinks of Bogosian. I still think he was, you know, he's a top junior player, and he's a guy who should be successful in the NHL, and he's still really young. So I would hope that he's a cornerstone of the franchise. I think that trading him would be crazy.
Okay. Because there's been a lot of rumors about the Oilers possibly picking him up, and I'd be thrilled by that because I think he's exactly what they need on the blue line. While we have you here, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about the Oilers. In looking at their roster right now, I think the best way to improve it is to find another goalie who either could play in tandem with Devan Dubnyk or as a starter over Devan Dubnyk, and you might improve that team by 25 or 30 goals in terms of differential right away. Is that fair, or am I being too hard on Nikolai Habibulin?
No, I don't think that anybody could be too hard on Nikolai Habibulin at this point. not clear that it'll be 25 or 30 goals, but we're talking 15, and we're also talking, I think, a comfort level. There's something very, very difficult about having a really bad goalie, and you know, we see that Philadelphia really, really overreacted to having bad goalies over the last few years, and I think things would definitely improve in Edmonton in sort of a much more of a psychological way.
Right.
Even if the results on the ice weren't that much better, people would just not say, "Oh my God, Habibulin just let in another stinker." You know, you'd have a guy there who you felt somewhat comfortable with. At the very least, you know, the Oilers could go for the league minimum and have a guy who was, you know, a little bit better than Habibulin.
Right.
So it doesn't, you know, this team is pretty far away from being competitive, mm-hmm. right? I mean, when your leading scorer had 43 points, it's a tough situation. You have a ton of injuries. Trade away Dustin Penner for nothing. It's a bad situation, and the goaltending itself is not going to kick the team up several places in the standings.
Yeah, I think the thing that people have to realize is the Oilers can improve by 20 points and still finish in 13th in the Western Conference. They're a long way away from being a contender.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the Oilers because the situation, from my perspective, is just so dire.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what, Gabriel, I thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your insight, not just in the Oilers situation, but with regard to the Winnipeg Jets. And one final question. The Arctic Ice Hockey has been around for a while, but with the Jets coming on stream as an NHL team, are you getting a lot more more hits. Is there a fundamental Winnipeg Jets internet fan base that is driving themselves to your site and elsewhere?
Well, I've actually seen traffic double since we launched the site on June 20th. And I expect, and this is typically a very dead month, I think, for talking hockey on the internet. Mm-hmm. So aside from free agent signing day. So I really expect once training camp opens, once the season actually starts, we're going to see a huge uptick. Winnipeg is just it's a natural hockey market, like Edmonton, like Calgary, where people are really, really into this. And so I think there's also a lack of of organized formal sites out there talking hockey. So I think we're going to see a huge boost in traffic and in interest once the season opens.
Gabriel, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'll talk to you again soon.
Gabriel Desjardins from Arctic Ice Hockey and BehindTheNet.ca, a very interesting gentleman, and as I mentioned at the top of the interview, a person who has been integral in the advanced stats movement and has BehindTheNet.ca, which is a starting point for pretty much every conversation. We're back with Corey Graham after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 10 minutes after 1 o'clock. Hi there, it's Alan Mitchell. Nation Radio at the Team 1260.com is the email address. If you want to send along comments and questions, we'll be happy to pass them along. Joined now by Corey Graham. Corey, how are you, man?
Good, Alan. How are you?
I'm very well. You enjoying this weather? You going to the races tomorrow, or?
Yeah, I'm planning to head down there a little bit tomorrow. I was down yesterday, and it wasn't pretty. So it's good to see some sun today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I imagine that even at a beautiful day like today, when sun is shining, you're thinking about the fall, and it must be pretty cool contemplating the fact that the World Junior Championships are going to be in Alberta, 6 months from now, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty cool thing. You know, you got the camp coming up here right away in August and the chance to see the best juniors in the world right here in Edmonton and Team Canada playing their games here. And then, the final down in Calgary. It should be a pretty cool event.
Now, how long are we? I know that there's going to be a plethora of great hockey players coming. How long are we talking about, a month away from the training camp?
Actually, there's a summer camp, I want to say the first weekend in August.
So okay.
A couple of weeks away, yeah. It's August 4th to 6th, I want to say it is, down at Rexall. So, yeah, right around the corner here. It'd be pretty cool.
Is that open to the fans as well?
It's a great question. I believe so, but I don't know 100%.
Yeah, you know what? I should have researched that. My bad there. We'll get an answer. Okay, let's move on to one of the very famous juniors, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. If you're a betting man and you're in Vegas right now and you're in front of the window, does he make the Oilers?
You know what? It's hard to bet against this kid. It's, everywhere he's been, whether it's a 15-year-old coming into Western Hockey League, every level this kid's been at, he's been the smaller kid that's trying to make a team, and he's done it. He's never, the only team he's ever not made was that junior team last year as an underage. So I find it tough to believe that he won't be right in the mix. You'll see probably a lot of exhibition games for this kid, and I would think at least 9 games, and then, hey, if he plays like, we all think he can. There's probably no way they can send this guy back down because he just seems so driven to come in and make every team he's ever had a chance to. So, I really expect him to show pretty well in camp and be really driven to make this team.
Is it reasonable to think that maybe they'll nurse him through 9 games, possibly not play him every one, bring him along a little more slowly like they did with Alex Hemske a decade ago, and then loan him out for the World Juniors and then bring him back and maybe play him a little more? Or is that just blue skying it?
I don't know. It's interesting because that's kind of what LA did with Braden Schenn, right? He played 8 games, but they were all spread out, and it took him a while, but they did eventually send him back to Brandon right before the juniors. Of course, he got traded to Saskatoon right after the World Juniors. So, I'm kind of like you. I'd love to see this kid play in the World Juniors because I think it's a stage where you can go and dominate, and it's good for your career to have that behind you. But I mean, if he comes in and plays well and forces his way onto this team, I don't know if you can kind of slow track him a little bit. I think if he's ready to go and contributing at the NHL level, I think you got to keep him up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if after 9 games, if he's got 6 or 7 points, I don't know how on earth you're going to be able to send the guy out. Let's talk about the Oil Kings. This is a team with real depth now and quality. I mean, there's been a few drafts. These kids have come along. They've done very well. Can they make the playoffs and go deep into the second season in 2012? Is that something that Oil Kings fans should mark as a definite possibility?
I think so. I think, yeah, for sure. I mean, this team is going to be, in my opinion, a top four team in the Eastern Conference of the Western Hockey League. Should have home ice advantage, hopefully, in the first round of the playoffs for their first time in modern franchise history. And you look at the players coming back, you know, the Rucks, the St. Croix, Foster, Pesek, Christian Spelsch. I mean, go down the list of their offensive guys the past couple of years. They're all coming back and should be a real strong nucleus. You mix in, you know, Griffin Reinhart in his second Western Hockey League season as a 17-year-old getting ready for his draft. And, you know, don't count out Curtis Lazar, the young kid coming in. He's a 2013 eligible player, but, I mean, this guy lit it up at the Canada Games. So you look at this team, I think there's a lot of depth up front, Alan, and goaltending with Laurent Brossoit, the Calgary Flame draft pick. I think, you know, probably expect some big things out of him. So I really like the mix for this club right now, and I can't wait to get the season started.
I talked to Kent Simpson a few weeks ago, and he really pointed out Pels as a guy who improved over the season. What kind of role will he play, and what kind of expectations should Oilers fans have about an Oilers draft pick who is doing very well?
Yeah, I mean, last year he played a lot with Michael St. Croix and T.J. Foster. Pels is a really fast skater. He's unbelievably fast. Sometimes almost looks like he's out of control at times. He's got just that breakaway speed. And, you know, there's times when he has the puck on his stick. And, you know, he makes some wonderful plays. And I'm really looking forward to this year to see if he can kind of put it together at the same time. There's been times where he's had all kinds of speed, but no puck luck, and times where he makes unbelievable plays, and you're just like, wow, if he can combine that together, you know, his second year over in North America being a little bit more acclimatized. I mean, he had a pretty good rookie year in the Western League with 33 points, and, you know, really, like Ken said, really came on later in the season, you know, showed a little bit of a fiery side as well. And, you know, this guy's going to be a top six guy with the Oil Kings this year. And, you know, it's interesting because you watch him at Oilers camp. He looked like he fit right in the prospects development camp. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what this guy can do, you know, given a second year here in the Western Hockey League and over in North America, because, you know, we kind of always discount maybe the transition for some of these guys. But, you know, his English is getting better and he seems to be getting more comfortable. So, you know, I think this guy's going to be a major player for this team this year.
For Oilers fans who are, you know, obviously aware that the team is absolutely stunningly talented with young players up front and have some nice young defensemen like Marinchen coming into the fold, and Klefbom, who was just drafted this season, is a kid like Griffin Reinhart really an ideal potential Oiler to add in next year at the draft?
It's pretty interesting because he's big, you know, he's big, he can shoot the puck. He didn't play all that physical last year, but when he did, he was dominant physically. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Griffin can do this year, kind of now with a year behind him. He went through the injury problem last year when he broke a wrist late in the season and missed 6 weeks of the end of the season. So, you know, he's a big defenseman with a big-time shot from the point on the power play, moves the puck well, skates well for a big man, never looks like he's pressured. So, you know, he's going to be a guy that is going to be a top, you know, 10 area pick next year. And if the Oilers are kind of in that, you know, 8, 9, 10 spot, I would, you know, think that he'd be a nice fit there, the nice kind of bit of a difference. Well, they have a lot of size, but just kind of the way he skates is just a little different from what they have, and I really think he'd be a nice mix if he was around when they came up to pick next year.
Okay, speaking of the draft, last time we talked was around the draft and leading into it, I think on draft day or the second day of the draft, there were a few Oil Kings who were picked, but maybe not in the spots you thought, and then a couple who slid through the draft. Maybe talk about some of the guys that were picked by NHL teams, where they were picked, and I guess we could talk begin with Iwanek.
Yeah, Travis will want to go into the Oilers in the third round, which was, I think it's going to be a real nice fit for Trav. I honestly thought he might be the first guy picked off the team. He obviously went right behind Keegan Lowe to Carolina. So Travis is that, he's that shutdown third line center. You know, this team right now, we all kind of talk about what this team needs, the Oilers. And, you know, if they could have a Travis Iwanek 5 years from now, right now, he'd probably be the perfect player for this hockey club. He's, you know, he had the job of trying to shut down Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and he did pretty good 5-on-5 in that playoff series against the Red Deer Rebels. And, you know, Nugent Hopkins talked about, you know, trying to fight through his checks, which were tough to do, to find some space, open ice for him in that series. So, you know, Travis is a guy that he'll fight. He wins a lot of face-offs. He's strong in the puck, and, you know, he can constantly has been improving this year. So I think he's a real nice pick for the Oilers. And like I mentioned, he went right behind Keegan Lowe, who went to Carolina. And, you know, Keegan played this entire year with Mark Pesek for the most part on the back end and really grew his game. Early in the year, he was, I want to say, minus 10, and he finished up leading the team at plus 32 or plus 33 at the end of the year, and really kind of brought his game to the next level. He was a guy that Wasn't on the radar for a lot of teams early in the draft process. You know, throughout the year he wasn't ranked, and then he kind of shot up the rankings. You know, he didn't go to the combine, but ended up being the first Oil King picked in the third round by Carolina. And, you know, I thought probably real good value for them. I think he's kind of he's got a little bit of his dad in him. You know, he's a bit of that hard-nosed kid, and he seems to be getting more and more comfortable as he plays, and he plays big-time minutes for the Oil Kings. So, you know, I think obviously bright future for him. Let's see, Michael St. Croix went drafted to the New York Rangers. He fell a little bit in my mind. I thought he'd be a little bit earlier just because of his skill level. There's always been some questions about Mike's 200-foot game, I guess. But, you know, the Rangers, they went for skill on some of their picks with JT Miller and St. Croix, and I think they're going to have some, you know, he's going to be a guy that I think can contribute. Whether or not he's an NHLer, we'll see. He's definitely, I can definitely see him being at least a tweener, right? You know, at least a guy that's, you know, excellent at the AHL level. And, you know, Mike's going to, I know he worked really hard in his game this year, and if he does it again, he's got a shot to be a guy that can be an everyday NHLer. We mentioned Laurent Brossoit, the Calgary Flames draft pick, as he, you know, for big goaltender, kind of fell a little bit too. I was kind of surprised that he was, I think it was a sixth round pick by Calgary, but, you know, I talked to some people that watched him in development camp for the Flames, and a lot of people very impressed with his quickness and his size, and I think he's going to get the bulk of the load this year with the Edmonton Oil Kings. So I think Calgary could have a nice late round sleeper there as well.
Interesting. What about Ruck? Was it disappointing that he didn't go, and will he have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder and maybe be trying to show some people that they made a mistake?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think, you know, Ruck had 78 points, led this team in scoring this year. Of course, he's not overly big. Anybody that's seen him play knows he's not a big player, but he's sick offensively. He's got some great puck sense. He competes well, too. So I'm kind of disappointed he didn't get picked up late. We thought maybe a late flyer for a guy like Ruck, a team that, you know, looks at that offense and goes, it's hard to turn it down no matter what size it is, the way the NHL is going this year with or lately, I guess, with smaller players. Showing the offensive skill. He's going to get a look. I believe he's going to San Jose Sharks camp, so he's going to get a chance to have a shot at an NHL camp to get some seasoning underneath him. He's also a late birthday as well. He was born in September just after the draft cutoff, so he's an older player as well. So I think, you know, next year he'll still be draft eligible, so we'll see if he can put up the numbers he did again this year and maybe improve them. And who knows, maybe grow an inch or two. You never know with these kids. I think you might see him go next year.
A couple of quick questions to end things off here. I worked with Peter Labardius in many hundreds of years ago in Regina, and I still know more about the 89 draft than I want to because of him, because I hung around him too much that year. How weird is it going to be not having a guy like Labardius in his role moving forward with Rogers?
Yeah, that I'll tell you, that was a shock to me. Peter is he's one of the best guys in the business to go to. You can call him up, and like you said, the guy's an encyclopedia. It doesn't matter what league he's working in, and it won't take him long, I'm sure, to bounce somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, he covers junior hockey, NHL. I remember when I was doing the Bears at the Nationals, Peter would come in and call the University Cup and know every one of these guys. And I'm like, wow, I covered the Bears all year and knew the Western teams. And I ended up talking to Peter about some of the other guys, because here's a guy that's in the Memorial Cup, and he knows everything about every guy in the CIS. It's unbelievable. So, yeah, it's, you know, I was disappointed by that, because I think Peter does a fantastic job, and he's, you know, like you said, he's one of the best guys in the business. You can call him anytime, and he makes himself available. So I know Peter is going to be, he'll be fine, and he'll find a good way. I'm looking forward to wherever he lands.
Yeah, you know what? One of the nicest guys you ever want to meet.
Yeah.
One final question. How was Big Brother on Thursday night?
I have no idea. I don't know how I get roped into this. I'm not a Big Brother fan at all. It's Matt Iwanek, and I guess my friend was tweeting or texting him on my phone about Big Brother, and kind of got around the door. Look at you and Matt texted back and forth. I have no idea. I don't watch that stuff, Alan. Come on.
Would you be open to a PVR check at your home?
If I had a PVR, you could definitely check. How's that?
All right. Hey, you know what, Corey? Thanks so much for your time.
All right, man, no problem.
Okay, that was a Fed question. I want you to know that. That wasn't on my list. But Corey Graham, Oil Kings and Edmonton Sports Night Live here at Team 1260, and a nice guy in his own right. 122, we're back after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
127 at Nation Radio. You can reach us at Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. And I was in conversation just a few minutes ago with Corey about World Junior Camp in Edmonton. And I was wondering about, you know, the public getting in to see. And LVD emails me saying it's $14 general admission for the red and white game Saturday, August 6th, 7 o'clock at Rexall. So that's the junior kids. $14 general admission for a red and white game Saturday, the 6th of August, 7 o'clock at Rexall. I think that's the one where you watch Bob McKenzie and somebody else give reports as it's going on, something like that. And we'll look forward to that. Man, I tell you, it's not that far away. God, I love being a hockey fan in a hockey city. Earlier in the week, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, Ross McLeod from Team 1260 sat down and had a conversation with Tom Rennie about the Oilers this year and what he's looking forward to. And the conversation began over the busy summer for an NHL coach.
Well, I'm in about month number three. I'm actually at the beginning of December working on my season plan.
Did you want to share that with us now?
No.
I had to ask.
It just sounds good. It sounds right when it's the middle of the summertime and everyone thinks the coach is still working.
Yeah, just in case Kevin's listening or something,
yeah, that's right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I've been working like a son of a gun. you know, in all seriousness, I know you guys, this is, you know, a 12-month-a-year job, but do you actually get a decent stretch where you can try and detach from the game a little?
Yeah, you have to. And I've not really been very good at that over my career, quite honestly, and I've had more than one general manager tell me that it would be best to just take a breather and walk away from it, and I'm learning how to do that. So you have to make time for that, make provision for your family and some enjoyment and some R&R yourself. It's a long enough season as it is, and as much as we're just standing behind the bench watching it all from the best seat in the house, it's still very taxing, so you've got to give yourself a chance to put some gas in the tank.
You a football fan or anything like that? Like, are there other sports that you'll take an interest in to take the focus away from hockey?
Yeah, I like sports, period, as most of us do, and you know, whether it's the British Open or watching the CFL or you know, tennis, whatever it is, I enjoy all of that from a participatory point of view. I enjoy golf. My parts of my body don't allow me to play too much tennis anymore, but I like being on the water and you know, doing what I can.
So when you're sitting down and you're starting to work on the plan, and you have all these guys that were you know, drafted not that long ago, and some signings that have been made and that sort of thing, where do you start with the plan? Is it with a depth chart, or how does that go?
I think basically what you start with is your schedule, you know, and you look at the, sort of the nuances of that and the combination of games and how compressed it might be and for whatever reasons, and then you start to plug in those days that look to be maybe, you know, what could be days off, you know, days to replenish, days to just do off-ice training, you know, whatever it is, you try to plug in all of that. And then you start to look at your roster, quite honestly. I think you've got to have the plan for your season, and then you look at your roster, and then you identify through your roster exactly what it is you think you have to work on, what your team makeup might be, so you can define a little bit better a kind of a style of play for you, you know, based on roster, of course, and then, you know, to that end, even more so the schedule and those opportunities to rest. And there seems to be more and more and more science to this than there probably needs to be, but that's the nature of the beast.
When you sit down and it's part of the plan, and I guess it's the same with planning in any sort of business, you have to be prepared for change and then to adjust the plan accordingly. You know, for a hockey coach, do you go into it knowing that there is a very good chance that the plan could change significantly when you get to camp and you get some surprises, either good surprises or bad surprises?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, most of us go into our camp, for example, with a pretty good idea what your roster might look like. I don't think any of us close the door on the fact that there's a surprise or two that could, you know, that could strengthen your team. You know, it is a function of making sure you put the best team on the ice that you possibly can, and you know, we all pay attention to that. But you do have to flex, whether it's through, you know, personnel and what your roster might look like, or just, you know, the timetable of how you hope to put things together, to the point where you might even start to change some tactics based on, you know, on your players. I think, you know, coaching is such, you can't just sort of say, here's how we're playing, that's that. You know, you have to look at your personnel and realize that you might have to adjust a little bit and maybe implement something that may not have been on the radar initially that you want to bring in. And that's, you know, that's always a good thing.
Some of the guys will still be in Edmonton, but many will go to, you know, wherever they're from the time the season ends and get their own break as much as they can. And most of the players have been working out for at least a month now. Mm-hmm. How often would you be in contact with players, or does it vary depending on the guy?
It, I guess it varies. I mean, they'll all hear from me three or four times this summer for sure, directly. I send out texts and emails and those types of things to make sure that there's some level of correspondence at least. I think as much as anything, and it's not to police them at all. It's to encourage them and make sure they understand that there's a coaching staff here, because we all do have an opportunity to connect. All of our coaches are invited to, you know, to connect with players and see how they're doing and stay current with them. And so we do that on a regular basis because we care. We know we care how they're making out and how their summer's going. And oftentimes the phone call, you know, doesn't even talk about, you know, their level of fitness and what they're working on at that point in time, just how their summer's going. Are they enjoying it? How's their family? You know, things like that. Because at the end of the day, you know, they're more than just a player, that are stakeholders in all of this too. So, but we do stay in regular contact with them. And you know, for the most part, they go home with an idea of what they've got to come back with in terms of their level of fitness. And as much as anything, that's what they need to know.
Do you get, you know, especially because you've got a significantly younger team, do you get a lot of the young guys that will, you know, in the conversations that you have, are hyped about, you know, hey, I'd really like to play with so-and-so, or, you know, those kind of things?
Not really. You know, I think at the end of any season, for example, and maybe a little bit at the beginning of the next, you know, with exit interviews, for example, you know, you'll talk about a player's season and you know, how he thought he played, how you thought he played, who he might have played best with and why. Invite that kind of dialogue, no question about that. And, you know, you certainly make note of it at the end of the day. You know, and as much as, again, as you alluded to earlier, you know, there's sort of this plan, if you will. It can certainly change, but I think at the end of the day, you know, you have an idea who you'd like to see with who, making sure, again, that it's a bit of an open door so that you can make changes and you know, and you know, put your best team on the ice that you possibly can. But I don't think, you know, I don't think guys do that too often. I think you might provide that opportunity to a veteran player now and then, you know, if he's struggling or if he feels that there's a certain synergy with certain guys, you might afford him that luxury. But, you know, for the most part, you know, players play, coaches coach, and that's what we do.
Tom Rennie, head coach of the Oilers, with us. How different is your plan versus, and I guess I'm interested in the planning process, mm-hmm. than, say, I don't know, you know, one of the contenders from last season, Boston or somebody like that, where, you know, you have the basis going forward coming into September of a championship team or something that was very close to a championship team, versus where you are, where you're, you know, at year two or three of the rebuilding phase, and you got some very good pieces of the puzzle, but not the final pieces for, say, 2 years down the road when this is a Stanley Cup contending team.
I think that's a good point, a good question. I think for teams, for example, that, and if you look at Chicago last year, or previous, I should say, you know, that's a pretty short summer for those Stanley Cup finalists.
Yep.
You know, and of course, the Stanley Cup winner is out all over the place with the Stanley Cup, doing all kinds of public appearances, amongst other things. You know, and so that can really abbreviate your off season and your ability to prepare, because we all do. We're creatures of habit. We like to be prepared and organized so that we feel comfortable with the spontaneity of the game, quite honestly. And I know that, you know, someone like Claude Julien, for example, would be hard at work on his seasonal plan, you know, pretty much, you know, within the week of it being over, you know, the previous season. And so I think that there's something to be said for that. I think in terms of our team, you know, I know people might tire of it, but it really is a process to become a legitimate contender, you know, year after year. And that's what we're after here. This is not a situation where we're, you know, we're trying to fill this tank, you know, the fire hose and have one shot at it and be done with it. We want to make sure that because of the process and our ability to identify with the growth of individuals first and then our team beyond that, that it is something that stands the test of time. So it requires a good plan. It requires something that has some legs. It requires huge patience, you know, and a real attention to detail that allows you to stay the course, you know, even when you have those moments that you have no control over, and whether it's injuries or a tough stretch in the season or you're just not playing well. You know, you've got to be able to be prepared enough and organized enough to stay with it based on, you know, a vision and a philosophy, which is certainly what, you know, what Daryl, Kevin, and Steve have here for our team. And it's kind of a luxury for a coach, because you can, you know, you can keep your eye on the ball and realize that as much as anybody, you should be paying attention to development too. And under my circumstances, there aren't too many of us in this league that have that opportunity to look at almost development first and winning, you hope, will be a byproduct of that sooner rather than later and more of it. And so it's kind of a unique situation from that point of view.
Is it hard? Because this time of year when there is absolutely zip going on, you know, we have one CFL game of the week and, you know, the major golf championships are few and far between sort of ideas. So there's not a great amount happening in the sports world that would attract the attention of the masses. So, you know, you get a lot of speculation, whether it be on a radio station, in a newspaper, on a blog, whatever, about who should play with whom and this guy's not good enough. And is it hard? You know, and I'm just going back to what you said earlier about, you know, these are not just players that you coach, but you're all, you know, I don't think you use the word family, but in a lot of ways you are family because you spend a hell of a lot more time with these guys than you do your family during the season. Is it hard to hear criticism of these guys?
No, it's not. You know, I think you develop thick skin, and certainly from a coaching point of view, as all of us have, we get nailed as well as anybody, you know, and hard, and that's just, that's the law of the land. That's the way it goes. We have a short window of opportunity to make a decent living doing what we absolutely adore doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're lucky, you know, and with that comes criticism and naysayers, and that's all fine. This is entertainment, you know, and people should have every right to be critical of their team, to support it, to have suggestions, to blog, and, you know, that's just where the social media is, and that's where we are in the game and pro sports. And why would you ever begin to even try to police that when you would be policing your fans right out of the game, and then what have you got? So, nope, not at all. As long as you keep it in perspective and keep your eye on the ball and you know, as an organization, again, as I alluded to earlier, keep a philosophy in the forefront of your mind day after day after day. You know, that kind of stuff actually becomes fun, you know, and there's nothing wrong with some fun in the game.
Is it hard to, you know, as you're in these rebuilding plans, if you will, and we enter year whatever it is, not to try and fast forward to the championship year, because you sit down and you go, look, we got Ryan Smith back, we got Horkoff's healthy, Hemsky's healthy, we got Taylor Hall, we've got Nugent Hopkins coming along, we've got this guy, we've got this guy, we got this guy, we're close. Let's fast forward to year five. Everyone on board? Okay, let's go. Is it hard not to think that way?
Yeah. It is. You know, when you're behind the bench and you've got your guys out there just fighting and scratching and clawing to be competitive and give the other team, you know, something serious to think about, you know, and you might come up short again, as we did a whole bunch of times this year with one goal games, it becomes hard, and not for yourself from a selfish perspective as a coach, but for your guys, because you know what, we are a family, and you know, from my point of view at least, that's my coaching style, is that we've got to be there for each other, we've got to come to work and make the rink a destination, you know, and we've got to do everything we possibly can to get the best out of each other by whatever the challenge might be, you know, and at the end of the day, we look up at the scoreboard and see what kind of work we did, and that's pretty indicative, you know, and so for us at least, you know, you just press on, you know, and I am a, you know, my style is to certainly teach in the moment and deal in the moment and get wins today, no question about that, but it won't be at the expense of what we have to invest in to make sure that this hockey club is something that the fans of Edmonton can be really proud of for an awful long time, and that's sincere.
If you, you know, we fast forward a month or so here and we're at camp and Ryan Nugent Hopkins is playing incredibly well at camp and, you know, does well through exhibition games, that kind of thing, and the decision is made, maybe we'll keep this kid around. Does it become, for those kinds of players, and maybe it's not fair to comment about him specifically, but in general, for those kind of players, that it becomes a game by game, and then the closer you get to, you know, the ninth game, you're making the decision there? Or how does that work in general?
Well, I think if a player warrants that opportunity to play, you know, to at least start the season with your team, you know, it's pretty much a game at a time for everybody. I mean, that's why you carry 23 people, that's why you have an end to the bench, and that's why you have a press box, you know, and if the player's not able to measure up, you know, I'm not going to be the guy that stands in the way of a young fellow that could be playing an awful lot of hockey at the junior level, you know, by putting him in the press box because I don't think he's ready. If he's going to start the season with us and he's going to play nine games, you better rest assured, you know, if he's done his work and we do our due diligence with developing him, that he's going to play 10 and beyond. You can't do that and play a kid 40 times, and play him 8 or 10 minutes and expect him to be what you want at the end of the day. That's diminishing returns. So the bottom line is we're going to have to make a sensible decision on a player like he, to make sure that if he stays with us, he's going to play. He's not going to be a spectator, and I think that's important. If you look at last year, our young guys played, and they needed to. It wasn't a case of protecting them by not putting them out on the ice to do certain things, and I think that's where that's where Hall and Eberle and Pajarvi were strong enough, to deal with the rigors of the NHL. The great question for Ryan, I think, will be, because it appears to me at least, and that's without having seen him at training camp, that he can certainly navigate his way through a hockey game with his intelligence and his hockey sense and what's intuitive to him. The great question will be, can he handle it physically?
What's the biggest question mark going into camp?
Honestly, it's more from a team perspective. It doesn't revolve around any one player. It's, how much better, are we?
Mm-hmm.
How much better can we become? And, are we in a position to legitimately pursue a playoff spot? And that's what we want to do. That's our objective for sure. So the biggest question mark, I guess, going in is how far have we come?
And, do you think this is a playoff team as it stands?
Hard to say. You don't know until the puck drops and you get a chance to sort of see the other teams and see the distance between yourself and those front runners, if you will, or those that are deemed as being contenders. You have to see what the gap looks like. For us, I see no reason why even to be in the league if we don't identify with the playoffs. What are we doing? At the same time as I say that, and it does not change our pursuit of a playoff spot. There's 29 other teams wanting to do the same thing. We have circumstances that are probably unique to just about everybody else in the league, quite honestly, with our rebuild and our experience level of our squad. But that doesn't change the fact that we know what we want to do.
Do you guys have any, and if you have any thoughts on it, realignment? I know it's not obviously for this season, but for next year with Winnipeg coming in, and I mean Phoenix, obviously that franchise is still in some peril, so there might be, another reason for realignment. But do you have any thoughts on how you think it should go? Some people talk about we should have a Canadian division, and it should be more geographic based. There's about a million different scenarios, it seems, out there. Where do you lie on that?
I'm always one to just, play with the cards you dealt, as with most of us, we all have an opinion on everything. I'm no different than anybody else. I'll say one thing. I think looking historically back at Winnipeg, on the rivalry between Winnipeg and Edmonton and Calgary and Vancouver, I thought it was sensational, and I think it would be great to see Winnipeg, and the rest of us in the same division, which is, I hope, kind of where this is leaning, but you never know. At the end of the day, I don't know that I've got a real clear answer for you, other than I'd love to see the whole relationship between Winnipeg and the Canadian teams, the Western Canadian teams, at least kind of revived, because it looks awfully good to see Winnipeg back in the NHL in the first place.
Agreed. Enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll see you in about a month.
That sounds great. Thanks for the call.
And that's Tom Rennie with Ross McLeod earlier in the week. That was the day that Bob Stauffer blew a tire, I think, between noon and 2. And Ross jumped in. And I thought that was a fascinating interview to get a little bit of input from the coach during the summertime on several points. And I want to make a few points about that interview, but I also want to take a break. So we're going to take a break and talk about what Tom Rennie said about a few issues. And we'll be back right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We've got about 5 minutes here to chat, and I wanted to talk about that Tom Rennie interview for a lot of reasons. And the first one is when Ross McLeod asked him about the, criticism and the teams, the players being criticized by, the media and whomever, he mentioned, that's part of the business. And he talked about blogs, and he talked about, anybody involved in that, that's your fan base. And I think that's a brilliant and mature way of looking at it, and I hope that that's true. And I have no reason to believe that he didn't obviously say how he felt, because the bottom line is that the Edmonton Oilers fan base is as rabid as any, and you can't go on the internet and shake a stick without finding an intelligent or unintelligent Oiler blog. And you have to ask yourself, why is that the case? It's because they're so beloved. You have fans from my era. I became an Oiler fan, you have to understand, and when I was growing up, there was the Leafs and the Habs on TV. That was it. And then the Canucks came in 1970. That was the Western Canadian representation. And so I was a Canucks fan for a couple of years, and when the Oilers arrived, I still remember Bill Hunter behind the on the highway behind the big backdrop of the Oiler WHA sign that he had. He held a press conference. Somebody took a picture. That's emblazoned in my mind. So that's like 40-some years ago, or 40 years ago, that that happened. That's the kind of fan base that the Oilers have. And I think Tom Rennie mentioned something there that, that shows great maturity about the fact that the people are so critical because they love the Oilers. That's the deal. It's not a matter of just putting people down. It's that everybody wants to see this team succeed. He also talked about coaching and the fact that, you know, Tom Rennie's in a difficult spot, and I'll tell you why. I'll use the New York Islanders as an example. When the Islanders expanded, when they were first into the National Hockey League, their coaches were Phil Goyette, who won 6 games in 50 games, and he was fired. And then the next coach was Earl Angerfield, and he won 6 games in 30 games, and he was fired. That was year one. In year two, Al Arbor came along. And you know what? They weren't a whole hell of a lot better. They won 19 games all year. But Al Arbor was able to be the bridge between a developing team that, and then a team that could contend and finally win. And they didn't win until 1980. Oh, by the way, 6 years into his coaching tenure, they win their first Stanley Cup. That's where Rennie is trying to bridge from the guy who is part of the development group, and we'd include McTavish a little bit and Quinn as well. But it's he's going to have to make that transition. It's a difficult thing to do. He's talked about it in the past. He's a smart guy, obviously, and an intelligent coach, obviously. But that's what he's dealing with right here. And I'll tell you, it's a sticky wicket, because when one of these years, when they're in a losing streak, the coach is going to be susceptible, and as is the GM. But that's a difficult thing that he's trying to do. And I think he really shows himself to be a pretty intelligent guy when he's talking, you know, in those terms about the coaching and about the criticism. He also talked about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Very interesting insight into RNH. If he's going to be here, he's going to play. This isn't a guy they're going to sit for a few games, as I mentioned earlier. Possibly, you know, he plays, you know, 9 games over 30 games or something like that. He's going to play if he's here. Maybe not every night and maybe not 15 minutes a night, but this is a young man who they're either going to play or send away. And I still think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is going to make the team. Now, after 9 games, they're going to make a decision, but if he plays well, I think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins may be one of the 4 centers that the Oilers feature during the 11-12 season. And he also answered, I thought, very honestly, the idea of, are we a playoff team? He said, I don't know. He's obviously going to say, not going to say, no, I don't think so. But there have been improvements. At some point this year, he's going to have to make a tough decision in goal and on the blue line. An example would be going to training camp. The general manager is going to say, you know, Taylor Chorney, we can't send him out because he'll have to clear waivers. And Tom Rennie is going to have to say, you know what, Jeff Petrie is one of 2 right-handed defensemen along with Tom Gilbert on this team. If Petrie plays better, I think you have to keep him. I think you have to legitimately say, this is a guy, no matter what else happens, if we have to risk waivers on Chorney or put somebody else on IR, I think that Jeff Petrie is a guy who makes sense for the Edmonton Oilers as they stand right now. As a matter of fact, I think you could argue that not only is him one of the top 7 defensemen, but easily in the top 6 and possibly in the top 4, depending upon how well Cam Barker plays during preseason and training camp, because you've got Whitney and you've got Gilbert, and then you've got Smead, Peckham, that group. And where Petrie slides in there, this is not a 20-year-old kid. This is an individual who's played a lot of NCAA hockey, been in pro now for a while, and I think Jeff Petrie, you could argue, is going to make this hockey club. Interesting day. I want to thank, obviously, Tom Rennie via Ross McLeod, an interesting interview there. Kent Wilson from the Nation site. Scott Reynolds from Copper and Blue. Interesting, their CNB Top 25 Under 25 is ongoing. Corey Graham, talking a little bit about the Edmonton Oil Kings and their summer, and obviously the Canadian World Junior camp that happens here in August. And Gabriel Desjardins, fascinating character and an individual we can talk to about secondary stats, advanced stats, and now we can bring him in and talk to him about the Winnipeg Jets. This is Nation Radio. We invite your emails all the time at nationradio@team1260.com. If you have somebody you'd like to hear in the next few weeks, as far as guests are concerned, send us an email. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy.